From Chicago, this is Inside Politics, a weekly program of political discussion and intrigue with occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by a panel of political insiders, power brokers, and public servants. I'm your host, Bruce Dumont. Thank you very much for joining us this week for our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, coming to you from the Radio Hall of Fame at the Museum of Broadcast Communications at the Chicago Cultural Center. And thank you very much for joining us this week for our program. And many stations around the country this week are carrying this program live because of the topical nature of what is transpiring this evening in Richmond, Virginia. And a reminder also that after the presidential debate this Thursday night, we will be back to present a post-debate special edition of Inside Politics. So we hope that you will be able to stay with us for the full evening. Just put up your, pull up an easy chair, get a can of your favorite brew or beverage, and join us throughout the evening here on Inside Politics. A special welcome to everybody out there in Oklahoma City that's joining us this week. We thank you very much for being with us, and our folks in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and Tampa Bay, or Florida, and also Santa Barbara, California, all new members of the Inside Politics Radio Network, and we thank you very much for joining us. We have a very special new telephone number because we are live tonight in most of the markets that carry this program. We have an 800 number effective tonight. It is 1-800-723-8289. Let me repeat it. 1-800-723-8289. Hop on the phone. We'd be interested in your comments on the presidential election. And most notably, we would like to know what advice you would give to the candidate of your choice as they prepare for the second presidential debate. Joining us this week to share their thoughts and opinions, we welcome a permanent panel member of our Inside Politics team. She is a member of the National Steering Committee of the National Women's Political Caucus. Say hello to Grace Kaminkiewicz. Grace, thank you very much for being with us. Also joining us, making his first appearance on this program, but a well-known political operative and observer in the Chicagoland area, he is director of the Institute for Public Policy and Administration at Governor State University. Say hello to Paul Green. Paul, thank you very much for being with us. Also, we welcome an attorney in private practice who is supportive of George Bush. He was general counsel of the United States Office of Personnel Management under President Ronald Reagan. And say hello to Joe Morris. Joe, thank you very much for being with us. A representative of Ross Perot is scheduled to be with us before the program ends. In fact, he's a little bit late, but hopefully he will arrive as we move forward on Inside Politics. Time now for Know and Tell, that part of our show where we ask each guest to share with us for the first time something that they know that they now want to tell. And we begin this week with Grace Kaminkiewicz.
Okay. Some of Bill Clinton's senior advisors are urging him to announce that if he wins the election, he will appoint Mr. H. Ross Perot, head of a task force, to work on reducing the deficit by lowering the cost of government.
Very and interesting.
Might even do it tonight if he decides he wants to do it.
An olive branch to the Ross Perot people tonight.
Well, I wouldn't call it that. I think it's recognition that Mr. Perot has
the guy needs a job?
Yeah. No, that he has a valid point.
Joe Morris, tell us something that you know that you now want to tell.
Well, I know something also about the thinking that the Clinton camp is doing about how it might staff up a future Clinton administration. I was in the audience at the Conservative Political Action Conference in Washington back in February when Dan Quayle made a joke. He predicted what would the world be like if Pat Schroeder became Secretary of Defense. Well, some of my friends in the Clinton camp with whom I've been talking this week, and yes, Gray, some of my closest friends are Democrats, have told me that the Clinton team, in an effort to be responsible and get a little lead time in the event of a Clinton election, is already looking at who might staff up a Clinton administration, and I've got some of those names on the short list. For Secretary of Defense, in fact, Pat Schroeder is on the list, along with Admiral Crow, who's been playing a prominent role in the Clinton campaign recently. Two names on the short list, seriously being talked about in Little Rock for Secretary of State, are Steve Solars, congressman from New York who's about to be out of a job, and Richard Shifter, former Assistant Secretary of State under George Bush, who quit and is now giving foreign policy advice to Governor Clinton. Over at OMB, or maybe Council of Economic Advisers, Robert Reich, probably no surprise there. Felix Rohatyn is being looked at seriously for Secretary of the Treasury, and for Attorney General of the United States.
The winner is?
Tell us.
A couple of interesting names. One is Talbot, a.k.a. Sandy D'Alembert, until August of this year, president of the American Bar Association, a Florida lawyer who led the charge for abortion at the American Bar Association
and?
Meeting this year. And yes, it is true. They've done focus groups on it. They're testing the waters. They're really considering whether Robert F. Kennedy can be reprised. They're doing serious talking about whether or not Bill Clinton could get away appointing Hillary Clinton as Attorney General of the United States. Not in the bank, but they're doing serious water testing.
You know, I thought you were going to say they were going to appoint his brother. I said Robert Kennedy was going to appoint his brother.
He'll be front of the DEA. You know what the...
I think
there goes the oldest cliche. Politics does make strange bedfellows.
I think that you are providing disinformation so that you can frighten potential Clinton voters.
Well, that's fascinating because I must say, Grace.
You think that would frighten Clinton voters?
I think those people who are reluctant Clinton voters, who are Republicans and are nervous about voting Democratic, might be a little put off by
let us make a point, and then we're going to move to Paul Green, who we've heard, but he has not had his official no and tell.
Yes.
And, Joe, you have set the world's indoor record for the longest no and tell.
All right.
Goody, goody. All it's right. No longer mine.
Longer than anyone that Tom Roser and Grace together have ever been before. But anyway, it was interesting. Let us turn to Paul Green. We want to give you the honor of a formal introduction and a formal no and tell.
I'll do two quick no and tells, which will be half as long as Joe's one.
Okay.
The first no and tell is that I have been in contact with good friends in both California and New York, and I believe Newsday has just come out with a poll in New York that shows Clinton anywhere from 25 to 30 points up, and Bush is pulling the plug on that state. And a good friend of ours in California, Lou Masati, just called me and said that they've also pulled the plug in California, which means that the Clinton team has New York and California, unless something happens that Mr. Bush wins it without trying. But the Bush team is out of both those states. The other quick know and tell is that I can tell you, and no one knows this except myself in this room, Hillary Clinton and Linda Byrd Robb, had a meeting yesterday with a large number of women on the health issues in Williamsburg, Virginia. And that is going to be one of the top priorities of the new Clinton administration, is going to be women's health issues. And I would suggest to you tonight that we are probably looking at a potential, if not a conflict, certainly a battle between the advocates of women's health issues and the advocates of AIDS in a Clinton administration.
Okay. Before we go too much further, I want to now focus on the debate that is at hand. Grace Kamenkiewicz, what is your advice? If you could speak to Governor Bill Clinton right now, what advice would you give him about tonight's debate?
Be presidential. Stay firm. Don't stoop to the Republican tactics.
And what advice would you give to President George Bush, Joe?
Avoid personalities. Do your best to articulate a vision thing. Be as specific as possible on an affirmative agenda for the next 4 years, and do not be afraid to criticize the proposals or the diagnoses of Ross Perot.
And since our Ross Perot person is not arrived yet, Paul Green, I am designating you as the Ross Perot spokesman at this moment.
We have a great deal in common.
It's not easy being
Green.
We
have a great deal in common.
What advice would you give Ross Perot?
Well, I don't know what being presidential means. Does that mean acting like Ronald Reagan, Gerald Ford, Richard Nixon? I'm not quite sure what that means, but we'll let that pass. If I was Ross Perot, I would just swing for the fences in the second debate like he did in the first debate. He has nothing to lose. He is the first stop-and-go candidate in presidential history, so he is literally has a free shot to do whatever he wants to do. And I would just keep doing it. I mean, he's the only one up there who seems to be having any fun, and I would just keep telling him to keep doing what he's doing. He has nothing to lose. He is rekindling whatever fires were burning in his belly in July, and I just think he should just keep doing it.
Should we expect tonight a continuation of the themes that were articulated by Dan Quayle and Albert Gore in the vice presidential debate? Grace?
Yeah, absolutely. But I don't know that President Bush is going to act like the little Rottweiler that Dan Quayle acted like.
Joe?
You're speechless.
That was the kindest thing Grace Kamenkiewicz has said about Dan Quayle in a quadrennium.
That's probably true.
Was it a four-letter word?
Yes, I think we will see the same themes being sounded, and that's unfortunate, because the President Bush and Governor Clinton should rise above those themes. It's important for them to be projecting affirmative agendas. I will say this. I shall be fascinated to see if Ross Perot sounds one of the themes that Admiral Stockdale, in the midst of what was pretty much a contentless presentation, although excellent at demonstrating the peril of gridlock in Washington, did make. Admiral Stockdale got off a far better critique of Al Gore's environmentalism than Dan Quayle or George Bush has done to date. He hit it on the nose when he said that Al Gore is striking an extreme balance on environmental issues, and I hope that Ross Perot returns to that theme tonight because it is an excellent one.
Okay, we're going to turn to some telephone calls, and let's go to Brian. Thank you for giving us a call at 1-800-723-8289. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Hello?
Are you there, Brian? Go ahead.
Yes, I am. Good evening, folks.
Thank you.
If I was the other two candidates other than Ross Perot, I think I would subtly find a way to bring Admiral Stockdale into the discussion. While he looked like a very honorable and a fine man, he didn't. Someone just referred there to him as having a contentless appearance the other night. I think that if lightning were to strike and Stockdale were to become our vice president, it would be the closest real-life thing we have to the movie Being There. You know, I'm not trying to criticize the man personally, but if
well,
we look at
he's doing a hell of a job.
Well, I said the other night in a television appearance here in Chicago that I thought that all of the bounce that Ross Perot got because of his performance on Sunday night, it was significantly deflated because of the performance by Admiral Stockdale. Now, Admiral Stockdale has demonstrated personally probably more courage and more determination than me, everyone on this panel, everyone in this room, probably 99.9% of the people listening to this broadcast tonight. So I want to say that.
Right.
However, he did not communicate a willingness, and as a citizen of the United States, I personally don't think I would be very comfortable knowing that he was a heartbeat away.
Perot's problem is deeper than that, and our caller has hit an important nail on the head. Admiral Stockdale unquestionably is an honorable and a fine man,
yeah.
But the problem is this. Ross Perot has said that Admiral Stockdale is merely a placeholder.
No.
On the ticket. On the ticket in order to secure a place on all 50 ballots. Now Ross Perot is more recently backed away from that, but we don't know that for sure, and Perot has talked about the mechanism.
Do you expect Perot to address that tonight?
I think he's going to say something about Stockdale tonight.
And, you know, I think one of the things he's going to say is you can't judge a man because he lacks glibness.
That point is fair, but he can't lack content, too.
I'm not sure that he lacked content.
When a candidate's at 9%, isn't it rather a waste of time to discuss how is vice president?
Oh,
is
he's
act.
Climbing. Yeah. I'm sorry. Paul. Today, Paul. He CNN showed him up to 15%.
Do you expect Clinton this evening? Is he going to try to deal with the trust issue as it relates to himself? We can expect that he's going to go after George Bush. Is he going to try to take the one issue that the Republicans apparently have? And there is some indication that there's some softness on the trust issue. Is he going to try to deal with that head on?
Oh, I think he will, and I think he'll do it rather easily. The number one issue in this country is the economy. And so that issue is working in Bill Clinton's behalf without Bill Clinton doing anything about it. So I think he'll come up, just like he had that one pat line on with George Bush's father to deal with the thing in Russia, I think he'll have the trust issue. Mind you, in that first debate, the line that I thought Bill Clinton got away with that was truly the line of this campaign is when he congratulated his wife Hillary on their 17th wedding anniversary. That man's come a long way since Super Bowl Sunday in January. So I don't think there's anything that he can't do now on the trust issue, and I think he'll knock it out of the park.
Okay, let's turn and take another call. Billy, you're on Inside Politics. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
Good. My comment is for Governor Clinton, and that when Bush starts talking to him about his flip-flopping on the issues, I think Governor Clinton should remind Bush that he used to call Reaganomics voodoo economics and then embrace these policies when he was offered the vice presidency. Now, 12 years later, it turns out he was right all along. They had, well, were voodoo economics. And also...
I like you.
Thank you. And also talk about his flip-flop on abortion. He used to support abortion rights, and now he's opposed. So there's two flip-flops for Bush.
Well, I'm disappointed that George Bush has not followed Ronald Reagan's economic policies for the last 4 years, and Bush would not be in as weak a political position as he is if he had done otherwise. But there is nothing discreditable about thinking in public and changing one's mind in public if one is willing to admit that one is changing one's mind. The rag on Bill Clinton and to a lesser extent on Al Gore is these fellows change their minds and won't own up to it. And that's disappointing.
Grace?
I'm sorry. You know, as far as Mr. Bush is concerned, he more than changes his mind. He shows that the reason he changes his mind is for pragmatic political reasons. It is not centered in any sort of principle at all. And that's, I mean, remember, this is the man who, when he was in Congress, was called Rubber George because he was such a big supporter of Planned Parenthood.
Well, I'm glad.
Is that what he was called? Really?
He was indeed. He was
Grace,
called Rubber George.
Was that
George.
In his bio? I haven't seen that in his bio. From Chicago, you're listening to a special edition of Inside Politics. If you're listening around the country, our telephone number is 1-800-723-8980. I'm sorry. Let's try it again. 1-800-723-8989. You're listening to Inside Politics. I'm Bruce Dumont, coming to you from Chicago on the Inside Politics Radio Network. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Reminder, this is a special edition of Inside Politics. After the program this week, on most of these same Inside Politics stations, you will be hearing the debate from Richmond, Virginia, between George Bush and Bill Clinton and Ross Perot. And following that, we will be back with your response. Our new phone number effective this week, 1-800-723-8289. If you want to participate, hop on the line right now. National support for Inside Politics is provided by City and State, Crane's Newspaper for City and State Government, and by MCI Communications Corporation, the nation's second largest long-distance carrier. Your name and your question, sir.
My name is Sasha, and I had heard last week on NPR that Bush is now considering pulling out of North Carolina. Is this true, and what does this indicate about his attitude toward the swing states?
Paul Green, what about pulling out of North Carolina?
No,
if he pulls out too many more states,
yeah, if he pulls
what's
out
he doing
of,
with all the money?
If he pulls out of too many more states, he'll have to be running in Eastern Europe. No, I don't. No, he can't.
Where he'd win.
Where he'd add, he's very popular, I might add. But, no, he can't pull out of any southern state. I mean, there's nothing left. Let me just say this, that the irony of this campaign is that in 1984, 1988, the Democrats had a strategy where they had to win a certain number of states that were earmarked. They had no chance in other states, and unless they pitched the perfect game, they couldn't compete, and they didn't do it. In 92, George Bush is being put in the same position. For him to even think of a winning electoral coalition, he has just a limited states that he can compete in, and he has to win them all. So he cannot give up on any southern state.
Let's hear from those people listening to the program this week in Tallahassee and Killeen, Texas, and San Antonio, Texas, and Texarkana,
right,
and Tallahassee, and give us a call right now. Your name and your question, sir.
Alan Levin. My question is comments from the panel in that I placed a bet at 3-1 with my brother Howard that Perot will get under 5% of the popular vote. Do they think I went too high?
I think that...
Let's go right around the table, starting with you, Joe. The popular percentage vote for Ross Perot will be?
I think it'll be probably around 20%, and I'm going to go that high because I think Ross Perot is impressing the American people with his ability to command their attention while talking substance.
Grace, what's your pick?
Well, he's at 15% now, and I think he'll end up between 10 and 15%.
Paul?
15%.
Oh, and here's Orville.
Okay. And just as we say that, let us welcome a representative of the Ross Perot campaign. He is the McHenry County, Illinois chairman. McHenry County, one of the major rural counties surrounding Cook County, which is the seat of power in the for the city of Chicago. Say hello to Orville Bretman. Orville, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you. I'm sorry I'm late.
Did you get stuck on some of that lousy infrastructure that the 50-cent-a-gallon gasoline tax is going to repair? Is that why you're late?
We hope it does. There was a small fender bender near the airport. It's a zoo out there.
Okay. Let us turn to another question from the audience. Your name and your question, sir.
Okay. Mark Weinstein. My question is, I don't understand how Bill Clinton can get so much attention for what he did 25 years ago, and yet here's George Bush, the leader of our country, hiding the truth from us on Iran-Contra and on the building up of Saddam Hussein, and yet we don't seem to be making a big deal about that.
Joe?
Well, look, come on. George Bush's behavior in Iran-Contra has been the subject of every one of the Iran-Contra investigations that we've had. We've had, what, 6 years of them now, and anything that we're going to know about it before the election, we already know. The inquiries that have been raised about Bill Clinton's attitudes back in the ugly 60s and early 70s about this country are not altogether irrelevant to the formation of the man. Let me be the first to say that altogether too much attention has been paid to them, but they're not totally irrelevant to this campaign.
Well, you sound like you have a lack of conviction as you talk about Mr. Bush's investigations. The truth is...
There is a lack of conviction in this. The special prosecutor hasn't managed to convict anybody of anything substantive.
A lack of conviction on your part, sir.
And there's an important
sir,
message
but
there.
But the truth...
Yes, but, I have enough
now,
money
come on,
to
but,
spend.
You know, let's face reality. Bill Clinton has a very potent issue in the economy, and he will mention Iran-Contra. They will make speeches on it occasionally, but as long as they stay focused on the economy,
Grace,
they're ahead.
Are you conceding that if the economy was booming, then Bill Clinton would be stooping to throwing mud?
No, I think if the economy were booming, then Bill Clinton would have to work a lot harder.
Okay, we've got more questions from the audience. Your name and your question, sir.
Bill Williams. During the vice presidential debates, Al Gore, in his responses, did everything that is normally correct as a debater. Many critics said that he was too slick and too cocky. Tell me, why is that bad?
Not bad to me.
Let Orville respond to that.
I think that was a question for the Clinton camp.
No, what do you think, though? How do you think Al Gore did?
Well, I felt personally injured, actually, by the ordeal that Admiral Stockdale was put through. The other fellows did what they do best and have done for years. They proved to us that they're professional politicians, perfectly able to attack each other. It was a little embarrassing, not only for Admiral Stockdale, who, although he may not be the greatest public speaker, clearly came that night to address the issues and only the issues, to hear these two go at each other's throat.
He didn't come to prepare to address the health issue.
Well, I think that's quite true. I don't think he did come prepared to discuss the health issue.
I think Al Gore might have stooped to Dan Quayle's level. And you know, I was really rooting for him to say, when Quayle was trying to come up with this weird arithmetic of a $34,000 area of break for where people would have to pay increased taxes, I was sitting there listening, and I kept saying, tell him, Al, tell him his arithmetic is as bad as his spelling. But he didn't stoop to that, I must say, and he stayed what I considered vice presidential, and I think it worked to his advantage.
Okay, we've got a question. Your name and your question, ma'am.
My name is Sane Riley, and in response to why it's hard to investigate the Iran-Contra, I think we find that many of the people that were involved in that and had key answers to questions have mysteriously died. And I wonder why this hasn't been responded to more by the press and a lot of these things put together, such as the heavy drinker that Bush promised an appointment when he was first came in after Reagan. He did not get that appointment, died mysteriously later. We have the writer who had everything to live for coming out with a book on Iran-Contra, committed suicide. He was a writer. He left a one-line note. Most writers wouldn't do that. And then Neer. He died in a plane crash 2 weeks after Bush took office, mysteriously.
I think you're leaving no stone unturned, and I think you should call up Oliver and tell him you want this to be another movie.
All right, now let's look at some of these factually. Is there some reason that we should be alarmed with this?
Well, the heavy
a lot of things that to some people look conspiratorial when you look under. I mean, you know, even paranoids have enemies.
Some of the time.
Well, these conspiracy theories are remarkably fringe. I mean, John Tower, who is the drunk whom this woman is disparaging, who was killed in a plane crash with his daughter and a lot of other people. And that plane crash is an event that has been thoroughly investigated and not a shred of evidence to suggest that there was some sinister hand behind it and so on down the line. If you want to find a conspiracy on anything, if that's your frame of mind, you look for it, you'll find it.
Well, there's enough real stuff out there, and I was very pleased to see that CBS News has now broken the story of a connection between the Bush campaign and the so-called independent committee that produced the Willie Horton ad 4 years ago. So
that was Al Gore. The Willie Horton issue started in the 1988 presidential campaign in the primaries by Al Gore.
All right, Mr.
Ladies and gentlemen, Grace, Joe, back to your corners. That campaign is over. We're talking about 1992.
By the way,
and here's our next question.
Just in case.
My name is Dean Milano, and in regards to Grace's comment on Perot possibly being asked for a position in Clinton's cabinet, I find that very interesting. If he does talk to Perot about that tonight, if Perot even discussed it with him, wouldn't it be political suicide? Would he may as well concede the race at that point?
Oh, I'm sure that Mr. Perot would have some facile and interesting one-liner to deflect it so they didn't have to address it at this point.
Mr. Clinton, if he is elected president, will not offer Mr. Perot anything. The one guy he does not want in any part of his inner circle or any part of his administration would be Ross Perot, other than Dan Quayle. Grace, I totally disagree with you. There's no reason for him to do it. He would be setting himself up for internal dissension. In 4 years, he's setting him up for a primary fight or a challenge.
How about if Ross Perot offers the vice presidency to Al Gore or to Dan Quayle? Or to George Bush or to Bill Clinton?
Bruce, if Bill Clinton offers a role in his administration or the run-up to it to Ross Perot, that would be as silly as George Bush saying, elect me because I'll make Jim Baker domestic czar.
Okay, we're going to go to calls. Let's go to New York. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes.
Go ahead. Juan?
Yes.
Where in New York are you calling from?
New York, Manhattan.
New York. Go ahead.
I've got a suggestion for George Bush tonight. I really think that he should drop the character issue at this point unless he has far more substantial evidence. At this point, harping on that feature is clearly a desperation tactic, and it sounds desperate. I think the American people are sick of it.
I'm with this guy. If I were giving advice in George Bush's ear, I'd tell him to do exactly that. Be affirmative. Put out the affirmative agenda. That's what the country wants to hear from you.
Exactly. Focus on the details of the program for economic renewal and Clinton's inexperience regarding foreign affairs, perhaps.
New York caller, did Newsday come out with their poll today?
I haven't seen it, if they have.
Okay.
Do you read Screw? Have you ever heard George Bush referred to as Rubber George?
That, by the way, was not in...
Let's talk about... Thanks very much. Let's go to you,
what are
Orville.
You reading, because Grace?
Some
Orville,
of us are supporters of Planned Parenthood, and we have long
memories.
All
right, let's go to. How many people would like
to discuss Planned Parenthood, applaud. How many people who would like to discuss the federal deficit, applaud? Orville, your guy has been on television explaining the federal deficit to the world, and we have seen his ratings soar, his poll figures soar. He did well in the debate the other evening. Are we going to get specific solutions tonight, or is he going to hold up the book and make everybody go and buy it?
We are going to get specific solutions. And
tonight?
I don't know if you want me to do this or not, but you'll get the solutions Friday night on NBC at 9:30.
Wait a minute. You're talking about tomorrow night or a week?
Night.
Oh, that's interesting. I thought he was going to wait till after the debates.
Is he
My
going
information
to...
is tomorrow night at 9:30 and Saturday night at 7 p.m. on ABC.
Why wouldn't he do it tonight?
I don't know what we're going to hear tonight. I know specifically that Texas is locked up, that you can't call in. All the calls are being taken by answer machines this afternoon. The lid is on. There may be a surprise tonight, but if there is, I can't give it away for you.
Could you explain to me why, or maybe I was not paying attention, but has someone rescinded the 12th Amendment? When Mr. Perot dropped out in July, he said he was afraid of throwing the election into the Electoral College. When he got back in October, there was no mention of that reason why he dropped out. What's the rationale? He's never explained if that was the reason he dropped out. Why did he get back in? Nothing has changed in the Constitution. He could still throw the election in the Electoral College.
I think that's quite right. He certainly could. I think he got back in, first of all, because he realized that he had made a mistake and admitted that right up front going in. And number two, after some more conversation, it becomes clear that the mistake that he made, and I think that if asked this directly, he would admit to it, is one of believing early on that the Democratic Party particularly was about to come to complete grips with the deficit issue and come out with a program that would facilitate its cure. This is quite clearly not the case. Although Bill Clinton has proposed a plan to reinvest in America, he does this with funny money. And the turnaround, which he anticipates, is based upon an economic model that, if it fails, will clearly bankrupt the country as a whole. So it's like shooting craps with your last 10 cents.
Grace?
Yeah, Orville, I seem to have the feeling from listening to both Mr. Perot and Admiral Stockdale that they had different views of the Democratic Party program, Mr. Clinton's program. What do you know about that, or how do you address that?
That may well be. We don't have a campaign in the Perot camp, a camp without a campaign in the common sense, such as you would normally find at this level of national politics. There are not great, huge rooms filled with spin doctors.
No, but do they talk to each other?
I'm sure they do talk to each other, but they adopt an independent view, and as it was said earlier on this program, Admiral Stockdale was never intended, either by himself or by Ross Perot, to be the ultimate vice presidential candidate.
Well, Orville, listen, first of all, I think that Perot's dropping out in July was a vote of confidence. Everybody interpreted it as a vote of confidence at the end of the Democratic National Convention in the Clinton-Gore ticket, and his coming back in has got to be interpreted as a vote of no confidence in the Democratic alternative. But let me ask you about Admiral Stockdale.
Or it is an admission that it was an ego trip from the get-go, and he had no idea that the response to his dropping out was going to be as vociferous as it was, and he's trying to protect his own place in history.
Or he was very clever to drop out and avoid a lot of heat and investigation, et cetera.
About Admiral Stockdale, we talked about that a little earlier tonight. Can you clarify for us, what is Admiral Stockdale's role? Is he merely a placeholder, and will there be somebody, if Ross Perot should be elected, that unique event in history happen, as Ross Perot put it, would someone else then be called upon by Ross Perot to serve? Would we go through that replacement process? Or is Admiral Stockdale really running for vice president?
I have to tell you that I believe at this point in time that he is really running for vice president. Will he remain as vice president should Perot become elected? I don't know. I can also clearly tell you
shouldn't we know that up front?
Know that up front.
All right, yeah, because I saw that press conference, and he made it very clear that he intended to keep him on the ticket.
I think he very well may keep him on the ticket.
But that
was
him on
not
the
way
different.
We started out. It was
no,
not
keeping
the
him on the ticket is different from serving.
Intend to have him as his vice president if the miracle occurs and he were elected.
Clearly,
do you expect, Joe, the president tonight
to go after Ross Perot in any way, or is he just going to ignore him?
No, I think the president will, because Ross Perot is now a serious player. Set apart the absence of organization, Ross Perot has proved that ideas do matter. Ross Perot has put ideas on the agenda, and neither the president nor Bill Clinton can any longer ignore the substance that Ross Perot is putting out.
I'm not so sure it's in George Bush's interest to go after Ross Perot. The only way George Bush can be competitive in this election is if Ross Perot gets even more popular and starts taking the anti-Bush vote away from Clinton. What we are beginning to see here, if Ross Perot really catches fire, is a good old-fashioned Chicago three-way primary, or where you try and get a plurality of the votes, and I think it's in George Bush's interest to goose up Ross Perot, so I would be shocked if he attacks Perot tonight.
Will Bill Clinton go after Ross Perot tonight, Grace?
No, I think he will retain a certain amount of deference to him.
Okay, from Chicago, you're listening to Inside Politics. Our telephone number is 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thank you very much for joining us for this special edition of Inside Politics, coming to you from the Radio Hall of Fame in Chicago on the Inside Politics Radio Network. Bruce Dumont back at the Radio Hall of Fame in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us this week live on the Inside Politics Radio Network. A reminder that the presidential debate will be coming up over most of these same stations from Richmond, Virginia in about 17 minutes. And at the conclusion of tonight's presidential debate over most of these same stations, we will be back with a live reaction. Our phone number is 1-800-723-8289. Write it down now, because after the debate, you may want to hop on the line and offer your instant analysis. 1-800-723-8289. And now, let us go to Rick Casey. Rick, are you there? Rick, are you there?
I am.
Rick Casey is the political columnist for the San Antonio Light in San Antonio, Texas. And for the last several weeks, we have been pondering here what the return of Ross Perot might mean to the race in Texas as it relates to George Bush's political future, because virtually everyone says that without Texas, George Bush is not going to go back to the White House for another 4 years. As you look at the state of Texas right now from San Antonio, what's happening down there?
Well, San Antonio is a very peculiar perspective. It's always been more liberal, more Democrat than the rest of Texas. That's largely because of a heavily Hispanic population here. The city itself is about 60% Hispanic, the county about 52%. But there's also much more of a tradition, even within portions of the Anglo community of a liberal political reality in San Antonio that you don't find in Dallas and Houston. As far as Ross Perot goes, my analysis is, at least in South Texas, he's got to hurt President Bush more than Governor Clinton. And the reason I say that is that he's going to draw people who are going to have a hard time voting for either of the two. Down here, the undecideds are more likely to be people who would have gone for Bush than people, I think, who would have gone for Clinton.
How aggressively is Governor Richards campaigning for the national ticket?
Well, she's working on it, but I don't see her all over the place doing it. Frankly, I thought I'd see more of her than we have, at least in San Antonio. She does have her hands full. She just had to call a special session for right after the election, a lame duck session, to deal with an education school funding crisis here. And she's had to work very hard to try and put together a plan that she can get to the legislature and get passed before the courts take over our school system.
Joe Morris has a question for you, Rick.
On the eve of Ross Perot's return to the campaign, Rick, when the two campaigns, the Bush and Clinton campaigns, made their respective genuflections to Ross Perot, it was Texas's two senators, Republican Phil Gramm and Democrat Lloyd Benson, who led the pilgrimages. What, if any, impact does that have upon Ross Perot's standing as a serious political player in the eyes of Texas political insiders as well as the eyes of the Texas public?
I think none. It was kind of an embarrassment, I think, to most of the insiders.
But let me flip the question then. What impact does that have on Phil Gramm and Lloyd Benson?
Well, you know, neither of them has to face election for quite a while. I guess Benson in 2 years and Gramm in four. And Benson is very, very solid. And in 4 years, everybody expects Gramm to run for president. And the only question is whether the legislature will let him do what they let Benson and Lyndon Johnson do, which is run for president and Senate at the same time.
But I don't see it really
having an impact on
Grace?
It.
Wouldn't they have to change the existing law? And uh-huh. Didn't John Nance Gardner run for...
Benson just did it in 1988.
Benson did it in 88.
Yeah.
And I don't believe they've changed it back. I believe right. They had changed it back and changed it back again, if I recall. But I mean, my memory isn't real clear on that.
Benson's the third.
Is there any special issue in Texas, or is it the economy like it is in virtually every other state?
It's economy. You know, side issues like gun control, which I think really worked against Dukakis here, you know, that hasn't been raised against Clinton. And Governor Richards, by going out hunting all the time, has taken away the notion that...
Hunting for what?
Oh, hunting. She hunts for turkey, dove, whatever. She's a good old boy.
Is there...
Quail.
Yes, quail.
Is there... you mentioned you're in perhaps an atypical portion of the Lone Star State, but...
It's very typical of South Texas, which is, you know, a lot of people, but... Yeah, you have to factor in Dallas and Houston.
Is there any pride to either Bush or Perot? I mean, they're both from Texas. Is there any pride?
I don't sense that. People think of Perot more as a billionaire than as a Texan.
Great line. Best line of the night.
Do you view, right at this moment, looking
you
at
know,
this...
You know, a politician we think of as a Texan is Clady Williams. You may remember him.
Yeah, and he didn't do too well.
Yeah, but Ann Richards is also... She's a cowgirl.
Where do you put, at this moment in time, again, factoring in the fact that you may be in a more liberal element of the state of Texas, who wins the election if it's held tomorrow?
It is really a toss-up. It is so close in the state, I don't know of anybody who's calling it. And you know, I think Clinton will carry Bexar County, which Dukakis didn't do. But whether he can carry, you know, it really depends. I think the state is going to depend heavily on Hispanic turnout, and that's the key. The Hispanics will vote about 75-80% for Clinton, but the question is, will they turn out? And it's incredibly volatile. To give you a good example, in 1981, Henry Cisneros became the first sophisticated Hispanic politician to run for mayor in anybody's memory. And like the mayor who won 2 years earlier, he got approximately 63% of the vote. But what many people didn't notice was the fellow he beat got more votes than the mayor 2 years earlier got who won. Mm-hmm. So the amount of variance in the turnout, and I don't see a lot of evidence that Clinton has really turned people on. We have a record registration here in Bexar County, and that includes a lot of Hispanics, but organizations register people, politicians get them to vote.
Well, you're getting registered turnouts or registration in a large part of the country, and I think the television ratings are indicative that more and more people are becoming involved, I think to a large extent because of Ross Perot and some of the excitement that he has brought to the campaign, and we may be looking at a record turnout of presidential participation, at least in recent times, coming up in November. Thank you very much. That's Rick Casey, who's political columnist of the San Antonio Light in Texas, and he listens to us regularly on KSTX FM radio in San Antonio, Texas. And we're going to go to the audience now and take some more questions for our panel. Your name and your question, sir.
My name is Sheldon Dre. Do you think it's fair to blame President Bush for the state of the economy when usually after any war or Cold War, there is an economic readjustment that would happen under any president?
Okay. Is it fair to blame the president?
If it was fair to blame Mr. Carter, then it's fair to blame Mr. Bush.
Orville?
Well, I think that it's noteworthy that the buck stops on his desk, as it was once said. I also think that we can't lay the whole economic situation off on the conclusion of the Cold War, but more importantly, the dramatic buildup that took place since Ronald Reagan was elected into office. I recall that on the day the Soviet Union finally folded up after Yeltsin made his last stand on the steps of the Russian Federation building, that on the very next day after we knew they were kaput, as they say over there, that we launched a $300 million satellite into office from Florida to keep track of Russian nuclear launches. Guys, that's why you're broke. That shit's got to stop. Pardon my French.
I don't think we can say that on radio.
Oh, it's public radio.
We may be able to say it on public radio, but I know there's a lot of radio we can't say that on. Your name and your question.
Carolina Song. George Bush is already in a pretty deep hole, but do you think that the BNL bank scandal and the squabble between the Justice Department and the CIA will have any impact on the campaign and or the election?
That's another nail in the coffin. I mean, that's really what it just keeps piling it up higher and higher and higher.
With all due respect, there's only one issue in this campaign. That's the economy. All these other issues are simply appetizers. There's only one meat, and that's the economy. If the economy was good, George Bush would be reelected. The economy is bad, George Bush is going down. And we could spend hours in debating nuances about this issue and that issue, and 2% of the people understand one of them and 1% understand the other. 60% of the latest New York Times polls say the economy is the number one issue. That's what people understand, and that's what's killing George Bush.
Paul's right, and Grace does have a tendency to get excited by the sorts of sideshows that typify
I called it
politics.
Nails in the coffin. I didn't say that was going to win the
keep
election.
Keep your eye on the big picture. And I'd like to.
Well,
respond.
Don't you get excited about demonstrations 20 plus years ago?
That's a big yawn too. I'll tell you what's important. When Ronald Reagan became president, roughly 25% of GNP was consumed by government. When he left the presidency, he had driven that number down to 23%. Tonight, as we sit here, George Bush has let it go back to 25%. That is a Ross Perot statistic. Ross Perot is exactly right. George Bush allowed that change to happen as a matter of conscious economic policy. That was his big mistake, and alas, my guy is reaping the whirlwind of that error.
Okay, let's take another question. Your name and your question, sir.
My name is Pat Cannon, and I just wonder, given Admiral Stockdale's performance the other night, how can anyone take Perot seriously anymore? I don't understand that.
Well,
put them in.
Well, I don't know that that's all fair. Given the fact that he didn't berate the other two opponents and carry on like a schoolboy about to try and start a brawl, given the fact that he was there definitely to talk about the issues, given the fact that he's a professor at Stanford University, past president of the Citadel, retired admiral from the U.S. Navy, I mean, he is not a polished professional politician, and I don't think with his age and standing in the community in which he's active, he really cares to emulate those fellows. He made that quite clear.
How many agree with what Orville just said? Applaud. How many people, based on the performance last week, really have very serious questions about whether he could serve as Vice President of the United States. Applaud. Okay, let's go to the audience again. Your name and your question.
My name is Ed Noonan. A question for Grace Kaminsky.
Kaminkiewicz.
That's the story of my life. The problem I have is her bringing up the idea that it was Rubber George, and simultaneously there was a whole group of people who felt that George Bush was a caretaker and always in a caretaker position, including the presidency, from the time he came to Washington, and was known as Chicken George. Has she heard that his name was Rubber Chicken George?
That's a public radio question.
Yeah.
Any comment on that, Grace?
No.
Any more questions in the audience? Yes.
Hey, is that, wait a second, Bruce. Is that where the phrase the rubber chicken circuit came from?
I think it did come from there. Your name and your question, sir, and then we're going to calls.
Joe Hennef. My question is not for one candidate or the other, but the process of these debates. Are they really genuinely helpful for people to make a rational and sane decision?
Well, I think, Bruce, they're genuinely helpful, but they're not as good as they could be. A couple of things are lacking. One of the most important of them is simply time. And Ross Perot has taught us something interesting in this campaign. The American people do have the patience to sit and listen for at least half an hour to one talking head making a coherent case. You can agree with him or disagree with him, think that he's analyzing things correctly or not. But we are more patient than the soundbite spin doctors of the major political campaigns think we are.
But I don't know that that was true before this year. I think the level of disgust has reached so high that there is a real change in the American public's ability to concentrate. I think they weren't interested before.
There are also different manners in which candidates can address the issues. They can address them in length. They can address them in personality interviews with Larry King. And I do not dismiss appearances on talk shows as somehow being insignificant to the process. I don't think that candidates for the presidency of the
Shocking
United States have ever really had better exposure to the American voter. And anyone that says they don't know where a person stands on an issue or can't figure it out, I don't know where they've been for the last 9 months.
I think
the
mix is terrific this year. Are getting some
The use of these celebrity talk shows, I think, has been the greatest innovation of all. Simply because people are willing to listen to a Larry King or someone like that interview a candidate than having three reporters interview a candidate. I mean, it may be the next show and tell that Larry King has to register as a PAC, but nevertheless, the fact of the matter is that because of that and because of his celebrity status and the ease in which he conducts an interview, it's entertainment and people are willing to listen.
Look at what
I want
Jay
to just
Kirk
stick one comment in here. I think it's necessary that people realize that the two major candidates have negotiated the forum down until it's nearly pablum. We're going to have an interesting opportunity to see something that we haven't seen before tonight. But so far, it serves
pablum in the vice presidential.
No, it wasn't. But it's not a true debate. Nor are the issues discussed at length. Nor are the rules adhered to as strictly as they would be for anybody that's familiar with collegiate debating.
I think one of the things that'll be interesting tonight is to see if the questions are really tough questions instead of some of the softball questions that you get over the Larry King show.
But remember, the moderator is a Chicagoan, so you know it's going to be rough and tumble.
Carol Simpson from ABC News. Do you expect a monumental surprise from somebody tonight, Joe?
If it comes, it may come from Ross Perot. We may see the beginnings of that affirmative agenda. I hope we see a monumental surprise from George Bush that he lays out the affirmative agenda we know he's got.
Paul Green.
No.
Orville.
I expect Ross to attack a little stronger tonight. I think he's about to go on the attack. That's what we're hearing.
Grace.
Maybe. I think it'll be a response to the circumstances and the questions.
How many people in the audience believe there will be a monumental bombshell by somebody during the next 90 minutes? Applaud. How many expect George Bush to come out fighting? Applaud. Okay, on that note, we want to thank our guest this evening for joining us, Republican Joe Morris, and our Perot supporter Orville Bretman, and Grace Kaminkiewicz, our supporter of Bill Clinton, and Paul Green, a supporter of Paul Green. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for being with us this week on Inside Politics. A reminder, our telephone number is 1-800-723-8289 for those of you along the network. If your station is carrying the presidential debate,
come back right after it's all over and offer your instant analysis. 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont. So long from Chicago.